Tov, Parashat Vayakov Pekudei, Tavshin Ayin Zayin. The topics of Mishkan v'Shabbat, the Tabernacle and Shabbat. Sponsored by friends of David Wicks, Zichrono Livracha, in his memory, Li'ilui Nishmat David Ben Mordechai Shmuel Zal. Tonight is also the Yortzeit of my father, Zichrono Livracha. So I will add his name, Yitzhak Ben Chaim Halevi. Okay, the parasha begins, the parasha of Vayakel Pekudei, just to remind ourselves, right? There's Truma Tetzave, Kitisa, Vayakel Pekudei. Truma, the parasha of Truma is about Klei HaMishkan, the vessels that were built for the Mishkan, like the Aron Kodesh and the Menorah, right? They were vessels. And then the building of the Mishkan itself, which was done something like a Lego set. You had beams that you put into weighted bases. And somehow that, you know, you had a pole and another pole and another pole. And then you stretch curtains across those poles. And that's what they had instead of walls. Right? That's how the Mishkan was made. So all of that is discussed in the Parasha of Truma. And the Parasha of Tetzaveh, the second Parasha of Tetzaveh, is mostly about Bigdei Kehuna, which we discussed, also in connection with Esther, because the Bigadim, which in the Torah are called Lechavot and Letiferet, those are like two hard words. I mean, more or less, everybody knows what they mean, but it's hard to be precise about Kavod and Tiferet. Megillat Esther, you know, there's a very strong emphasis on clothing in Megillat Esther. That we talked about that also this year, about the sack, that the sackcloth that Mordechai wore, and why it was that Esther was so unhappy about that turn of events. So, in the parasha of Tetzaveh, the emphasis is on the clothing, right? The Kohanim, the Kohen Hedyot, the regular Kohanim, and the Kohen Gadol. The Kohen Gadol had two kinds of sets of clothing, one that he wore on Yom HaKippurim, Bigdei Lavan, and the others that he wore all year long, what he participated in the Avodah, in the Beit HaMikdash. So that's Truma and Tetzaveh. Now Kitisa, the third of the five parashiyot, Kitisa has in it the story of building the Mizbeach Mechoshet, the small altar that was built in the Ohel Moed, in the Kodesh. Right? In that room there was a menorah, a shulchan, and a Mizbeach. And that little Mizbeach was used for the Ketoret, for the incense that was prepared that went along with certain Korbanot, certain of the... So that's Kitisa. The rest... So it's interesting that at the beginning of Kitisa, there are two Kelim that are mentioned, two objects that should have been mentioned in the Parasha of Truma. But they were left out, and they were included in Kitisa, and they are the Mizbeach Nechoshet, the small Mizbeach, and the Kiyor. The Kiyor, which is always translated as a laver. I don't know what a laver is. I think it's like a, what do they call those things you serve soup in?
A tureen,
right.
Big
soup.
Bowl.
What?
A big bowl.
Yeah, like a tureen. So The kiyor of Moshe Rabbeinu, Moshe Rabbeinu's kiyor, was not such a big deal, and it had two spouts in it, right? The Kohanim would somehow wash themselves. I don't know how many Kohanim actually participated in the Avodah at any particular time in the desert. But in the desert, all the Kohanim were there. It was only later on when the Beit HaMikdash was built by Shlomo HaMelech and the Kohanim lived all over the place that there was some kind of a problem about Kohanim doing the service in the Beit HaMikdash. And that's when they invented 24 groups. They divided the Kohanim into 24 groups and each group did a week and then another week. That made 58, right? I mean, I guess you get a few more on holidays and things like that. So they all of the Kohanim had were in a group. Each Kohen was in a group, and each group knew when it was supposed to do service in the Beit HaMikdash. But in the desert, all the Kohanim were there. They were all camped around the Mishkan, so they didn't have a problem. They didn't have a problem getting Kohanim, and the Avodah was probably a lot more abbreviated, but I want to get into that. So Kitisa begins with the utensils that were left out, right? The Mizbeach and the Choshen and the Kiyor, and then continues with a long and very explicit rendition of the Chet HaEgel. And in spite of the fact that the Torah is very explicit about the Chet HaEgel, very explicit about it, since it just didn't make any sense to take it at face value. It didn't make so much... Well, I don't mean that. What do I mean is that taking it face value was very distressing, I think, for the commentators. It was to say that Bnei Yisrael are getting the Torah and doing idolatry at the same time seemed to be very difficult for many commentaries, including the Ramban and including the Rambam. And in spite of the fact that the Torah says explicitly that you, Bnei Yisrael, are going to continue to be punished for the Chet HaEgel forever. In spite of that fact, the Rishonim insisted that it wasn't really Avodah Zarah. It wasn't really. Because, as I said, it's very hard to accommodate the idea that Bnei Yisrael is standing at Har Sinai, receiving the Torah. And according to Chazal, they only heard two dibrot, right? Two dibrot. The first diber, they say in Hebrew today, the first diber was Anochi Hashem Elokecho, right? That's the first diber. The second diber is Lo Tisa Hashem Hashem Elokecho Lashav, right? Anochi Hashem. That's all they heard. All they heard was that there's one God. They didn't hear anything else. Maybe at the end of the day, Moshe Rabbeinu came down and taught them the rest of the Ten Commandments. But at that very moment, they decided to get involved with Avodah Zarah, with real idolatry. So that's like a little bit difficult. But Kitisa, the parish of Kitisa, is about those two kelim in the beginning, the Mizbech Lechoshet and the Kiyor, and then the rest of the parasha is about Chet HaEgel, about Chet HaEgel. And then, amazingly, the Torah, in the last two parashiyot, the parashiyot of this Shabbat, the coming Shabbat, tells the whole thing about building the Mishkan over again, but reverses itself. The parasha of Vayakel is more about building, the building of it. And the parasha of Pekudei is more about the vessels in it. But the opposite of Truma and Tetzaveh, but the content of Truma and Tetzaveh is the same. Of Vayakel Pekudei is the same as Truma and Tetzaveh. And this I would say you can prove to yourself that there's nothing new in these parashiyot, because if you take a chumash and you look at it, you'll see there's no Rashi, and so that's a blessing of sorts. But the reason that there is no Rashi is because he said it all already in the first two parashiyot. So you have Truma Tetzaveh, Kitisa, and Vayakel Pekudei. So of course the repetition is a question, and the order is a question. Why the Torah switches around the order, and what is the difference between Truma and Tetzava and Vayakel Pekudei? All of those things are reasonable questions, but that's not the question we're going to deal with now. Vayakel Moshe, the first pasuk in the first of the two parshiyot for this Shabbat. Vayakel Moshe, right? He brought people together. He brought people together. Kol Adat v'nei Yisrael, right? A group, a community, but it must mean something. Vayomer Alehem, and he said to them. Vayakel Moshe kol adat b'nei Yisrael v'yomer Alehem, Eile hadvarim asher tziva Hashem la'asot otav. These are the things that God has commanded you to do. Okay, so Rashi says Vayakel Moshe. You see Rashi? Lemocharat Yom HaKippurim k'shirad minahar. We know that Moshe Rabbeinu, the dating of it is not obvious, but the tradition is that Moshe Rabbeinu came down from Har Sinai on the 10th day of Tishrei. And even though the 10th day of Tishrei was probably not yet Yom Kippurim, because no one had learned that halacha yet. I mean, the Torah of Yom HaKippurim had not been given to Bnei Yisrael, as far as we can imagine. But the day was Yom HaKippurim. That's what Rashi means. It, even though no one fasted, it was Yom HaKippurim. So we know that Moshe Rabbeinu went up on Har Sinai and Vav Sivan, and he stayed for 40 days. And then he came down to find the chet of Ha'egel, and he stayed for 40 days and mopped up the situation. Then he went up on Rosh Chodesh Elul, went up on the mountain again to get the second Luchot. The first Luchot were broken by this time. So he went to get the second Luchot. He stayed in Har Sinai again for 40 days and 40 nights. Right, so that from Rosh Chodesh Elul, if you count 40 days, you get to Yud Tishrei. And that's Yom HaKippurim, that's what Rashi says. This was the day after Yom Kippurim, Shiarad Min Ahar, when Moshe Rabbeinu came down from the mountain. V'hu Lashon Hif'il. For those of you who remember being in Ulpan, you know that Hebrew verbs are organized in certain kinds of patterns, called binyanim. And generally, binyanim have a general kind of meaning. Like, they don't tell you exactly what the word means, but they have some sort of general meaning. Like, the first binyan that you learn is usually called kal. And that means, like, a simple act. We're talking about verbs, right? A simple act. Safarti, safarta, safarti, right? I counted. Simple. And then the second binyan that you learn is usually called PL. Right? PL means, all of these things are not correct. Everything I'm saying is not correct, but I'm saying it anyway, because it's convenient. So PL is usually called intense. So you can't count intensively, but you can beat up on people intensively, so that that beating would be a more intensive form, using a more intensive form of the verb. And the intensive form of the verb has a dagesh chazak in ayin hapoal. Is that like Chinese? Dagesh chazak. Dagesh chazak. What? Osuma. Ken, the ayin hapoel, you know, in Hebrew, the Arabs started this, and we adopted it, that it was convenient to think about words as being built around an element, which is called a shoresh. Now, you understand, of course, that a shoresh, there's no shoresh, it doesn't exist. It's just like in our imagination, we imagine a shoresh. But there's no shoresh. You can't talk to people using shoresh. You have to have a, you have to vocalize it somehow. You have to make a word out of it. But it was convenient to talk about a shoresh. So the first binyanim are Kal and Piel, but later on there are these kind of forms which are I did it to you. So I did it to you is Hifil, right? Hilbish. He dressed him. Right, that's Hifil. So Rashi says that the word Vayakhel is Hu Lishon Hifil. Moshe did it to them. Sheino Osef Anashim Biyadayim Elohim Ne'esafim Al Pi Diburo. Moshe Rabbeinu spoke and they came. It's interesting because Moshe Rabbeinu spoke his entire life to Bnei Yisrael and taught them. And it always says, Vaydaber Hashem El Moshe Lemor, Daber El Bnei Yisrael. Here it says Vayakel, and Rashi says Moshe Rabbeinu did it to them. He did something. He got them to come. Sheino Osef Anashim Biyadayim Elahed Nisafim Al Pi Diburo. Moshe Rabbeinu was able to cause this collection to take place by talking. He was influential. He had charisma. He was able to bring them all together. V'tirgumo v'achnash. Achnash, and the reason Rashi says that, why Rashi quotes the Tirgum. Tirgum is the Aramaic translation above Unkelus, Unkelus in of the Torah. So why does Rashi quote it? Why does Rashi quote it? Because Achnash is the Hifil form in Aramaic. So it validates Rashi linguistically. It validates Rashi. You know that Rashi was interested in language, in words, in the meaning of words, and in grammar. He was very interested in grammar, and he knew a lot about grammar. How he knew that, Vesachman, I don't know. Because there was a tradition of grammarians in Spain, a little bit in France, but Rashi was basically a product of the yeshivot of his age. Speer and Magenza, Mayence. He went to those yeshivas. So where he learned all this stuff about language, I don't know. Maybe he was like a good learner. Could be. In any event, we get to Pasuk Bet, which is the Pasuk that interests us. Sheshit Yamim Te'asem Lacha, Uviyom HaShvi'i Yelechem Kodesh, Shabbat Shabbaton Lashem, Kol Oseh Bo Melacha Yumat. So we know what the words mean. Sheshit Yamim Te'asem. Te'asem is a nifal form. In other words, it doesn't matter. It's very hard to explain words according to the binyan. It doesn't really work. And there's no reason to do it. But it is a certain pattern, and that pattern is called nifal. So the pasuk says, Sheshit Yamim Te'aseh, it will be done. Like they used to like to call it passive. You know, something happens to you, right? Like passive was a big word in grammar. I think it's evacuated. So that's te'aseh melacha. What's melacha?
What?
It's one of the great mysteries. Yeah, well, but we're talking about 6 days as opposed to the seventh day. So b'yom ha'shvi'i yeh lachem, the pasuk says, Kodesh, it doesn't say Yelechem B'li Melacha. In other words, there's a contrast in the Pasuk between Melacha, which is what you do 6 days of the week, and Kodesh, which is what you do on Shabbat, and it says Shabbat Shabbaton, Shabbat Shabbaton. What is Shabbat Shabbaton? In Hebrew it's called Lashon Nofel Alashon, which is a very nice way of saying you have an extra word. In other words, there's no difference between Shabbat Shabbaton and Shabbat. Whatever Shabbat means, Shabbat Shabbaton means the same thing. But in the Torah, it's very common for this reduplicated form to exist. But it's very hard to know what it means. For example, mot yumat. I mean, you can only be dead. You can't be very dead. Sakol yisakel. Very stoned. And not in the drunk manner, right? Well, what does that mean? What's sakol yisakel? What's the difference between yisakel and sakol yisakel? Is there a difference? What's the difference between yumat and mot yumat? Very hard to know. Very hard to know. I mean, sometimes the Chazal make drashot about these reduplications, but not always. So here, in this case, Shabbat Shabbaton, there is, of course, an opinion that Shabbat Shabbaton and some other pasuk is about Yom HaKippurim. Like it's very Shabbos, Yom HaKippurim. Because not only don't you do all the things that you don't do on Shabbos, but you add on a few. So that could be Shabbat Shabbaton about Yom Kippur. But here we're talking about Shabbat, the seventh day of the week. Kol Oseh Bo Melacha Yumat. Kol Oseh Bo Melacha Yumat. Rashi. Sheshet Yamim. Ikdim Lehem Azharat Shabbat. The Tzibili Melechet HaMishkan. So what does Rashi say? That you have Trumat, Titzaveh, Kitisah, Vayakel, Vayakel. When the Torah is getting ready to tell you, about the Mishkan, it sticks in something about Shabbat. Why? What's Shabbat got to do with the Mishkan in particular? I mean, there are many things that the Mishkan has to do with the Shabbat, but why is this great announcement made in the beginning of Vayakel? So Rashi says, Lomar Sheina Docha the Shabbat. Lomar is a famous Rashi, everybody thinks about it, that what's not docha et Shabbat? Building the Mishkan. Building the Mishkan. In other words, people might have thought that you could build the Mishkan. You could build the Mishkan, and if you have to finish it, I mean, you're only going to build it once. Why shouldn't you build the Mishkan on Shabbat as well? I mean, how long does it take? As long as it takes to build the Mishkan, you'll do the work on Shabbat as well. So here, the pshat in Rashi is that you don't build the Mishkan on Shabbat, which brings us to the question of Shabbat. It brings us to the question of Shabbat. Now, why exactly do we keep Shabbat? Why exactly? Okay, because the Torah tells us to do so. But the Torah tells us to do so for a reason. Right? There's something about our appreciation of reality that is buttressed by Shabbat. And that appreciation of reality is Sheha'olam Mechudash. That's what we say on Shabbat. We say that God created the world. That's Shabbat. Because we know that when God created the world, the creation went on for 7 days. Every day, for 6 days, something was created on each of the 6 days. And on the seventh day, God rested. Seventh day, God rested. And therefore, by maintaining Shabbat, we say that we know that the world was created and didn't simply exist forever. That's what we say. The Rishonim, both the Rambam and the Ramban, had this problem. They wanted to know, how do we know that the world was created? We know that the Torah says that the world was created. Okay, you could say that. You could say the world says the world was created, and therefore, I don't have to know anything more. However, if you wanted to know, you wanted to have a proof that the world was created, so what would the proof be? So we mentioned it. I mentioned it in the past, right? You know that when you say Kiddush on Friday night, everybody either says Kiddush or hears Kiddush. So when you say Kiddush on Friday night, you say Zecher liyitziat Mitzrayim, Zecher lemaaseh bereishit. Those are the two Zechers that you say in the Kiddush on Friday night. So if it's true that Kiddush is an announcement about Shabbat, what does Zecher liyitziat Mitzrayim have to do with Shabbat? Pray. Now this is not my question. All the Rishonim asked this question. Why did Chazal direct us to say Zecher liyitziat Mitzrayim when we make Kiddush on Friday night? Because the Ramban says in several places, including that famous Ramban at the end of Parshat Bo, right, the Ramban says, Yitziat Mitzrayim proves that God can do in the world whatever God wills to do in the world. And that power reflects the creation. In other words, it's because God created the world that God could do anything in the world. So we say, even though I wasn't there when God created the world, and even though I really don't know that Shabbat was on the seventh day of creation, I do know that God took us out of Mitzrayim. And since God took us out of Mitzrayim, there's no doubt that God is in charge of the world that we live in. And since God is in charge of the world that we live in, that in charge could only have come from creation, from the fact that God created the world. So that saying Zecher liyitziat Mitzrayim is somehow an affirmation of the fact that there was Shabbat, and that we have to kind of do it. We have to do Shabbat. What do we do on Shabbat? What is it that we do on Shabbat? Well, we imitate rest by not doing melachot. Not melacha. Melacha could mean anything. But we have very specific attachment to the word melacha. And we know that there are 39 categories of melacha that we don't do on Shabbat. And we also know that those 39 categories of melachot are the melachot that were done in the Mishkan. And that means that when the Torah says, when Rashi says, you can't build the Mishkan on Shabbat. You can't build the Mishkan on Shabbat because that would deny the essence of Shabbat, which is a reflection of the Mishkan. It's the opposite. It's everything we do in the Mishkan we're not allowed to do on Shabbat. Everything we do in the Mishkan, we're not allowed to do on Shabbat. So there's this intensive connection between the Mishkan and Shabbat. So that's one thing that's what Rashi is saying. Right? There's a connection between the Mishkan and Shabbat. And that connection cannot be violated by building the Mishkan. I mean, you have to understand all these things they did on Shabbat in the Mishkan. But they couldn't build the Mishkan on Shabbat because building the Mishkan on Shabbat was melacha. It wasn't the avoda of the Mishkan. It was just doing things, and doing things was asur. So for example, you remember, we don't write on Shabbos. We don't, like with a pencil, we don't write. Now, In the Mishkan, these beams, the upper beams, were put into foundations. And when they took it apart, they had to figure out a way to remember which beam went into which foundation stone. So they wrote an aleph and an aleph. And then a bet and a bet. And that writing which we are enjoined from doing, comes from what they did in the Mishkan. That's one thing. So we do that. But what does that really have to do with Shabbos? What does it have to do with what happened in Briat HaOlam? What does it have to do with God creating the world? God created the world. We can't imitate that. And then God rested, and we can't imitate that. So it brings us back to the end of Parashat Bishalach. Right, remember the first parashiyot in Shmot, Shmot v'erev bo b'shalach Yisrael mishpatim, right? Shmot v'erev bo b'shalach Yisrael mishpatim, six parashiyot, right? Before Truma Tetzava Kitisa, six parashiyot. Shmot v'erev bo b'shalach, the end of b'shalach. B'shalach, they got out of Mitzrayim. The end of b'shalach is the parasha of the man. The parasha of the man. What does the parasha of the man say? The parasha of the man says that you could only take to eat the amount of man that you need. If you have four people in your house, so you can take four times whatever that amount is. Right? Four times. What happens if you take more? It goes bad. It goes bad and becomes unedible. Except on Friday. On Friday, you can take twice as much for each person, to have it for Friday and for Shabbos. That's the story of the man. And that's the story of Shabbos until this very day. Right? Every day we cook and then we eat. But on Friday, well, we cook and we eat on Friday for Friday, but we also cook and we eat on Friday, not eat, we cook on Friday for Shabbos. And that goes back to the man. So, again, the parasha, Perek Beis in Breishit, says, Vayivarech, God gave bracha, v'yikadesh, and sanctified. Bracha and sanctification for Shabbos, right? That's what it says in Breishit. And what does Rashi say? I didn't put on the sheet because you should all know it Baal Peh. Rashi says, very good. Nothing like a good Jewish education. Bercho b'man, v'kitcho b'man. Bercho b'man. He said, what does man have to do with the story in Bereshit? There was no man in Bereshit. There's no man when God created the world. But Rashi says, Vayivarech, what's the bracha? What's the bracha that you had in the world when God gets finished with creating the world? Oh, God thought about the man. What's the bracha in the man? That you get twice as much on Friday. That's called bracha. You get more than you need. I mean, you need it at Shabbos, but you don't need it at that moment. That's called bracha. It's like overflowing. Bercho b'man. What does kitcho b'man mean? You can't do anything with it. You can't change it. You can't adapt it. It is what it is. If you use the man to make cholent, you have cholent with man, but you can't cook it on Shabbos. You can't make it on Shabbos, right? That was a long-standing argument with the Karaites. Have you ever met a Karaite? You could still do that, you know, if you have acquisitive nature, you could like meet a Karaite and you could talk to them about how they do it. They don't cook on Shabbos. For them it's very simple. It says in the Pasuk here, in our parasha, that we're just learning, Lo tevaru eish b'kol boshvoteichem b'yom ha-shabbat. And simpletons as they are, they said, Lo tevaru eish. Imagine what they said. They said it means, don't light a fire. Well, what an odd shot of a pasuk of the Torah. So they don't light a fire. They don't light a fire. They can't make cholent. So Rav Sadia Gaon said, if you don't eat cholent on Shabbos, we suspect your pedigree. Pedigree is a word, isn't it? Like pedigree. Oh, it's only for animals. Pedigree. If you don't eat cholent on Shabbos, then you're under suspicion. Right? We get the gang after you. because you might be a Karaite. You might be a Karaite because Karaites insist that the Torah doesn't want you to cook anything on Shabbos, and the tricky way that we do it, right, which is like a little bit of a trick, what we do is we cook, well, that itself is a problem. We sort of cook it before Shabbos, and then we let it simmer, right, or keep cooking, or if it's cooked already. Shabbat. Okay. But doesn't mean it's not cooking.
What?
The what? I'm sorry.
Put everything raw just before Shabbos.
No.
And you can't eat it on Friday night.
You mean the Litvaks?
You can do that.
Not the Hasidim. Hasidim cook it all the way. All the way. Only Litvaks. Couples were divorced on that basis. Supposedly there was an agreement, you know, she would do it this way and he would be happy, and didn't work out. It was the Cholt divorce cases. This is very serious. We've overcome that because we figured, worst, we're going to eat. Berchol Baman means HaKadosh Baruch Hu wanted us to keep Shabbos. Wanted that. Because it says it, Aseret HaDibros, it says, keep Shabbos. Shemor Elohim HaShabbat L'Kadosho. This is Aseret HaDibros. So we said to HaKadosh Baruch Hu, what are we supposed to do? How are you supposed to keep Shabbos? But HaKadosh Baruch Hu said, man, if you do the man as I have instructed, then you are keeping Shabbos. Okay, there are certain enhancements and developments, but basically what we do, the most important thing that we do, which is not to cook, comes from man, or to prepare food for Shabbos on Friday. That comes from man. I know that there are certain things you can do and other things you can't do, and it's all very tricky, right? It's all very tricky, and it's very good that we have children and we send to school or come home and tell us that we can't do this or we can't do that. And that's wonderful. It's an educational system that no one has ever thought of before, that the children wipe out the ignorance of their parents. I mean, the children always think that they wipe out the ignorance of their parents. But this is a more permanent kind of wiping out. So the connection between Shabbos and Mishkan that we still are missing. There's a halachic connection, but there's also got to be a more ideological connection. So I want to read another pasuk. Here it says in Shmos Perikov Dalit, Vayal Moshe Lahar, Vayichasa Ananet Ahar. Moshe Rabbeinu went up to the mountain, and the cloud representing the presence of God, right? That's kavod. The word kavod, the word anan, they represent the presence of God. Vayishkon kavod Hashem al Har Sinai. Vayichaseu anan sheishet yamim. Vayikral yom Moshe b'yom ha-shvi'i mitoch ha-anan. So the pasuk says that in Matan Torah, in Moshe Rabbeinu's stay on the mountain, right? There was a Shabbos. There was a Shabbos. I don't know what day of the week is. It doesn't matter. But Sheishet Yamim, right? Vayikral Moshe b'yom ha-shvi'i mitoch ha-anan. So that Shabbos is the closest day that man and God have. Right? They're in the Yom HaShvi'i. Vayikral Moshe mitoch ha-anan. Umarek kvod Hashem ke'esh ochelet b'rosh ahar. Le'enei b'nei Yisrael. This is the end of Mishpatim. Moshe Rabbeinu is up on Har Sinai, and somehow Shabbos is involved in the relationship between Moshe Rabbeinu and HaKadosh Baruch Hu. Rashi, Vayichaseu Anan Rabboteinu Cholkim Badavar. There's a machloket about Vayichaseu Anan. Yesh Beim Omrim Elu Shisha Yamim. Shem Rosh Chodesh had Atzeret Yom Matan Torah. These are those 6 days. Right? This is what Rashi thought. Shebi Rosh Chodesh Hadatzeret Yom Matan Torah. Right? In other words, even though we say the Matan Torah was on Bet Vav Sivan, right? The sixth day, Shavuos, is always the sixth day of Sivan. And Rosh Chodesh was the first day of Sivan, right? The first day of Sivan was when they all came to Har Sinai. Ve'chaseu ha'anan lahar, ve'ikrel Moshe b'yom ha'shvi lomar aseret ha'dibrot. God wanted to tell Moshe Rabbeinu the Ten Commandments. U'moshe v'kol Yisrael omdim. They were all standing there. Ela shechalaka katuv, kavod l'moshe. Even though they were all standing there, the pasuk says, "Vayikra el Moshe b'yom ha'shvi'i." V'yesh omrim v'chaseu anan Moshe shisha yamim lachar aseret ha'dibrot. V'hem ayu b'tchilat arba'im yom she'ala Moshe lekabel aluchot v'lametcha shekol ha'nichnas l'machane shechina ta'un prisha shisha yamim. Anybody who wants to go, the second opinion in Rashi says that it was from the time of Aseret HaDibrot, another 6 days, when Moshe Rabbeinu came down and went up again on the mountain for the first of the 40 days. So that Matan Torah includes Shabbat. That's what the pasuk says. You have to have a Shabbat in order to get the Torah. Either the Shabbat, the sixth day or the seventh day, or the days before Aseret HaDibrot, or they're the sixth and seventh days after Aseret HaDibrot. Both are possible. Both are possible, but you'll always have Shabbat. You'll always have Shabbat. That's what the pasuk says. Then, again, Vasuli Mikdash Rishachanti B'tocham, that famous pasuk. Vasuli Mikdash Rishachanti B'tocham. This is an amazing pasuk, right? But what's pshat? What would you say? I'm trying not to be too annoying. A little annoying. Vasuli mikdash v'shachati b'tocham. What does that mean? What does that mean? It means, what is the mikdash? What is the mikdash? It's a makom, which is distinguished from every other makom. Because even though you could say God is everywhere, we won't try to argue that question, let's say God is everywhere. But the Mishkan says that God is more there than any place else. What does the pasuk say? That the world is the place of God. But in that world, there is not yet a special place for God. So that the creation of the special place for God is given over to Bnei Yisrael. Vasuli Mikdash Rishachati B'tocham. And that Vasuli Mikdash Rishachati B'tocham, where do they get the koach to do that? Where do they get the hubris to be the creators of a place that God can dwell in? Because they received the Torah face to face from God. They went through a remarkable experience. So you have another connection between the Mishkan and the Torah and Shabbos. Right? The Mishkan and the Torah and Shabbos. In other words, you have to have Shabbos in order to understand the experience at Matan Torah. What does the pasuk say? Right? Ve'asuli mikdash v'shachati b'tocham. What gives them the ability to Vasuli Mikdash Rishachati B'tocham? The confrontation that all of Bnei Israel had, according to Rashi, with HaKadosh Baruch Hu on Har Sinai. They became new people. They had new powers, new kochot that no one had ever imagined that they could have. So that there was this connection between Shabbat and Mishkan and HaKadosh Baruch Hu, right? So Shabbat and Mishkan have that connection. And then it says, "Kechol Hashini Mar'eh Otcha Et Tavnit HaMishkan V'Tavnit Kol Kelav V'Chein Ta'asu." Rashi says, Kechol asher ani mar'e otcha kan et tavnit ha-mishkan. I'm showing you the form of the Mishkan. Amikra zeh mechubal le-mikra shel ma'ala imenu v'asu li-mikdash kechol ani mar'e otcha. So what does that mean? What does that mean? What is the Mishkan? What is the Mishkan? So what Rashi is saying, I think, is that even if I give you the plans, even if I give you the measurements of the various kelim, right? If I give you the measurement of the various kelim, like the Aron, it's a meter v'chetzi, right? It says it in the Torah. I'm still not going to know exactly what it looks like. I'm going to have to get artisans to kind of formulate it, because look, we have even a machloka today about the menorah, right? You notice that the Lubavitcher menorahs that you see all over the city are all triangular. So why are they triangular? Because there's a ksav yad of the parish of the Mishnah, of the Rambam. There's a manuscript in which the figure of the menorah is drawn as triangular. Now that picture either is the Rambam, or it's somebody who was making pictures for the Rambam, or it's some know-nothing made it, and we should ignore it. So you have a choice. You have a choice, but we don't know today. There's a certain safek. Is it triangular? Is it round? Right? We don't know. So the building of the Kelim in the Mishkan, and the building of the Mishkan demanded different levels of enterprise, right? You needed people to be schleppers. They had to bring the stuff. Then you needed Bezalel and Oliav, who had expertise of sort. You know, they were, and then they were Chachmei Lev, you know, people who had artistic inclinations, who were able to take the raw material and make something really nice. Really nice from all of that. But at the end of the day, this is the Pasuk, Kechol Ashini Mar'eh Otcha Tavnit V'Shkan Mavim Kol Keila V'Chein Ta'atsu. There was a picture book. In other words, the building of the Mishkan was real Torah. Because real Torah is the interpretation that God leads you to when you are learning Torah. That's what real Torah is. I mean, because you could make a mistake. You could learn Torah and come out wrong. That's why we think that learning Torah is a spiritual adventure. Right? That's what learning Torah is. Because you have to feel that somehow you're in sync with the Ribbono Shel. That's what learning Torah is about. It's not only about learning stuff. It is about learning stuff. I mean, you know, we need professionals. We need dayanim. We need rabbanim. Maybe, considering the recent articles about rabbanim, maybe we could do without them. But in theory, we need rabbanim and dayanim and clay kodesh, and that all is about expertise. You have to learn something. You have to know how to do something. But beyond that, we always think that learning Torah is a value. It changes your life. So it doesn't just take up time. It doesn't just keep you from going to bad places or places you shouldn't go to. That's not what Talmud Torah is. But Talmud Torah is a spiritual adventure. And a spiritual adventure means that you have to get it right. How did they get it right with the Mishkan? Well, it says in the Pasuk, Asher ani mar'eotcha. Moshe Rabbeinu, at the end he said to the Ribbono Shel, how am I doing? And HaKadosh Baruch Hu showed him a picture from the Machon HaMikdash, probably. You know, like, here's the disc. Here's the disc with the... And this is what it looks like. So it's the Mishkan. The Mishkan was not only the place that Moshe Rabbeinu learned Torah and taught Bnei Yisrael the Torah that he learned, but the Mishkan was also the ultimate experience of Talmud Torah. Because at the end of the day, people came and they said, here, we did it. How is it? And then HaKadosh Baruch Hu showed them a big picture in the sky. Right? And that was it. That was how they knew that the finish, or the way they should finalize things was in accord with what HaKadosh Baruch Hu said. And it says, V'chein ta'asu. This is what you should do. Right? So Rashi says, K'chol asher adim mar'eh, K'chol ha'dmuyot shel kelim, all of the pictures, sort of these vessels, V'shel binyanim, her'alo mamash, HaKadosh Baruch Hu le'moshe. You know, it wasn't enough the words and the expertise and Bitzalel and Oliav and the Chachmei Lev. It wasn't enough. And then the Nashim Tavot, right? All the women came and they did what they knew how to do. Kimoshe Matzinu B'Yecheskel B'Binyan Beit HaMikdash Sher'u B'Bavel Mar'ot Elokim. Right? So he quotes Rashi, says that for Bayit Shlishi, right, the third Beit HaMikdash, which is described by Yecheskel in the book of Yecheskel, God came to Yecheskel and showed him how it should look. How it should look. So that part of the Mishkan, even though there was no Beit HaMikdash in the time of Yecheskel, right, but there was going to be one. And so Yecheskel describes the Beit HaMikdash that will be built at great length. And he says that HaKadosh Baruch Hu showed me this, or showed me that. So you see that the Beit HaMikdash is connected to Talmud Torah. And furthermore, this pasuk here, Shmot, the bottom of the page, right? Just Vakimota the Mishkan Kibishpato, you do it as it should. Asher her Eita Bahar Hofal. It's another binyan. It's a rare binyan in Hebrew called Hofal, which is the passive of Hif'il, right? Just to remember that the annoyance of grammar just follows you around. You can't help it. So it says it. Does it say it? Akimota et ha-mishkan. Put up the mishkan. Kimishpato, as it should be. Asher eta bahar, which you was shown on the mountain of Sinai. So that the building of the mishkan is the ultimate kind of Torah experience. It's not just about the rules of it, or the planning of it, or the artistry of it, but it's also about getting as close to God's intention as is possible. And the way that happened was pictures. The picture of the okay? Now look at the end, the last source. Vayakom et hachatzer saviv l'mishkan. They built a courtyard around the mishkan. Vila mizbeach. Right, the mizbeach is where they gave the korbanot. We're talking about the big mizbeach. Here's the mishkan. The mishkan is the building. Is a building, right? It's divided into two parts, two with a curtain, two thirds and one third. The one third is the Aron Kodesh, right? And the two thirds has the Shulchan, the Menorah, and the Mizbeach HaZahav. Yes, all of that in the one third. Now, when you go outside of this building, the first thing you meet is the Kiyor, and after the Kiyor is the big Mizbeach. Big, because you could actually walk around on the top of the Mizbeah. And there was a kevis, a ramp, that the Kohanim used to get to the Mizbeah. Right? There was this ramp. So the Pasuk says, Vayakam et hachatzer saviv lo mishkan. Here's the mishkan. Here's the chatzer going around the mishkan. Right? La mishkan la mizbeah. Mizbeah, of course, is this Mizbeah, the big Mizbeah. Mishkan Mizbeach, right? Veitein et masach shar hechatzer, vayechal Moshe et hamlacha. And Moshe Rabbeinu put up all the curtains, and he finished. He finished doing what had to be done. The last pasuk in the parasha, vayechasa anan et ol moed, ukvod Hashem malei et hamishkan. The anan. Which represents God in this case. Uchvod Hashem. Uchvod Hashem is some manifestation of God's presence. Maleyat HaMishkan filled the Mishkan. And when the Uchvod Hashem was in the Mishkan, no one else could go in. You couldn't go into the Mishkan when the Uchvod Hashem was in the Mishkan. But then when it went up, on top of the Mishkan, that was a signal for Moshe Rabbeinu to go in and learn the next parasha. Kod Hashem Alei HaMishkan, the Ramban. Look at the Ramban. Ki tocho malei kakavod. It's filled with kavod. Ki hakavod shochein betoche anan, tocha mishkan. Ki inyan shenema bahar Sinai, al el ha'arafel, asher sham ha'elokim. V'amar ki lo yachol Moshe lavo al ol moed afilu el ha'petach, not even Moshe Rabbeinu could go into the Mishkan because the oel was filled with the anan. So that's what happened. So you see that there's this religious drive that people have. People have, based on, I think, what the Torah wants of us, to find a way to appreciate the presence of God in the world. And that's connected to our understanding of Shabbat, which we celebrate because we recognize God's presence in the world, Zecher Yetziat Mitzrayim. That's what it's about. And that fortifies us and gives us the possibility of building a Mishkan. A Mishkan is a place where there's a heightened sense of the presence of God. And that sense, that heightened sense of the presence of God is something within us. Within us. And that's why I think the Kotel is attractive. Because even though it doesn't really have much halachic significance, other than the fact that maybe you shouldn't go there. I mean, according to some, you know, that's a halachic question. But certainly, people feel that there's something special. It's not like every place else. And even if it doesn't work for me at this moment, you know, even though I don't get the special, but I might get it. I mean, it's not a guarantee. It's not like you build a Mishkan. If Am Yisrael is able to build a Mishkan, so it means that every child who ever goes into the Mishkan is going to be overwhelmed by the presence of God. I don't think that that's what it means. I think what it means is that you have an opportunity. And if you combine Shabbos with building the Mishkan, with Asher Har'eita Bahar, what Moshe Rabbeinu saw on the mountain, with the idea of Talmud Torah, that Talmud Torah somehow is able to replace other forms of spirituality, and that's probably what kept us going as a nation. I mean, the only thing that we have that I can see, you know, everybody, you can see whatever you want, maybe pumpernickel bread is, but the only thing that we have that is worth being Jewish about is Torah. I mean, that's what we have. That's what we did. That's what we inherit. There isn't anything else. We're not involved in philosophy. We're not involved in history. I mean, today Jews are involved in everything. Yes, but the Jewish people, the enterprise of the Jewish people, seems to be Talmud Torah, and Talmud Torah leading to the experiential opportunity within Talmud Torah. And just like the Mishkan, as the Ramban says and Rabbeinu Bechaya said, the Mishkan was the attempt to keep Har Sinai with us, right? To always have that option, so to speak. Here's Har Sinai right in the middle of our camp. We're all camped around the Mishkan, and we've got Har Sinai with us. Which, according to Rabbeinu Bechaya, that's the reason that Har Sinai is of no interest in our tradition. I mean, nobody goes and makes a tour, you know, like there are no Haredi tours to Har Sinai. I mean, as far as I know, because Har Sinai doesn't really exist. It existed for Matan Torah, but then they took it with them. They took Har Sinai with them. So why would you go to Har Sinai if you can go to the Mishkan or you can go to the Beit HaMikdash? I mean, it's sort of like spiritually an irrelevancy. I mean, historically it might be interesting. I'm not to say about that. So that these three fulcrums, right, this idea that there's Shabbos and that we know that God created the world, and we know that there could be a Mishkan, and we know that the Mishkan, this idea, the Mishkan, the Mikdash, was replaced, at least in the interim period, by Talmud Torah. I mean, Talmud Torah is what we have. That's the opportunity for some kind of special feeling that you might have about HaKadosh Baruch Hu and your relationship to HaKadosh Baruch Hu. Okay. Okay. Okay.